the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Lighter tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by and big thanks to Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Satori Wellness, Eco Groovy Deals, Sensa Valley, and the Humboldt County Collective. Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you. That's just the truth. Well, whether you call it an anniversary or a jubilee or a commemoration, we are at the one-year mark in California's cannabis legalization experiment, and we're going to get some reaction to year one and talk about what's ahead and what strategies may be warranted in navigating the next year. First, though, an assessment of 2018 from Hezekiah Allen. He's chairman of the Emerald Grown Cooperative in Sacramento.
There's a couple different ways to look at it, of course. Tax revenue, I think, is one clear metric that's very important for the state. Significantly under projections, about $150 million shy on about $650 million projected. So, you know, it's no small chunk of change for the state to collect close to $500 million in taxes. It's a great, you know, nothing to shake a stick at, but it's a lot less than was projected, and certainly a lot less than, you know, the voters were told during the campaign. So, you know, another way to look at it would be the number of licenses. There is pretty clear licensing information available from the three state agencies. There are less than we had hoped. You know, I had been sort of hoping for 5,000 cultivators in year one. Even though there were about that many licenses issued, I was hoping for licensees, you know, many individual farmers, not a few farms with lots of licenses. So, you know, somewhat disappointing there, far too few manufacturers. And I think the big story out of 2018 is incredibly low number of retail facilities. Most Californians can't actually conveniently access regulated cannabis, and that's a huge problem.
Here in the studio with us are Drew Barber and Dylan Matole, co-founders of the Uplift Cannabis Co-op. Welcome to the Humboldt Chronicles. Drew, we should say welcome back. This is not your first time on this show. You guys, I'd like your reaction to 2018 and to what Hezekiah was talking about there.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me back. It's great to be back here. Yeah, I think he's spot on. I mean, fortunately, the market is still moving a little bit. We had actually times last year where the market was much more dead than it is now. For example, at the beginning of the year last year, because everybody stocked up on product before the taxation went into place on January 1st. And then again, come June and July, there was another big market challenge there with the labeling laws and stuff like that. So there's been a couple hiccups on the way, not to mention the larger hiccup of the challenge of getting retail shops functioning and their doors open.
I was just going to get to that. And Dylan, I'll ask you about that. Hezekiah was talking about the fact that, you know, there's kind of a dearth of retail. And in some areas of the state, people don't even have access or they're not even near a retailer. What do you hear about that coming down the line?
I know there's a lot of applications in. My understanding is that back in 2015, I think we had somewhere around, you know, well over 1,000, maybe as many as 1,500 dispensaries operating in LA County, and now we're at a couple of hundred. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the amount of product being thrown at the market and the ability of that to be moved through the licensed retail, certainly lacking. And you know, same thing in the Bay Area. There just aren't a lot of shops up and running yet.
Mm-hmm. But you guys are getting your products placed. Is that right so far?
Yeah. So, yeah, Uplift has product that's labeled and packaged that is for sale. We just actually had our brand opening mid-December, so we've just started to get product out there. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty expensive endeavor, and we're very much grass-rooting it out here. So we're going one step at a time. So we weren't able to show up to the marketplace with a giant menu or anything like that. It's just much too expensive. So.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because it seems to us from what we hear doing this show is that all the momentum is in the direction of more openness
in the cannabis markets at the state level and at the federal level, at least to some degree. We don't know yet. And in the world of public policy, generally, there's no going backwards. So that might mean that more competition is in the offing from more directions, which brings us to the discussion for this hour, which is co-ops and the advantage. With Uplift Cannabis Co-op, why form a co-op to start with? And so far, after the first year, what do you see as the advantages?
So lots of advantages. And so I guess if we just start with the advantages, all the growers are going to appreciate this one. It's a support group, right? Like mm-hmm. you've got that right off the bat. Becoming compliant in the last 2.5, 3 years has been a really tremendously emotional, financial roller coaster. It's been crazy.
And uncertain, too.
Completely uncertain. Yeah. Yeah. One thing after another. There's people preying on the needs of farmers. There's been consultants that have done, charged a lot of money and offered very little deliverables. And we haven't, a lot of times, nobody's really known because we're inventing this thing as we're going along. As sometimes I've heard Hezekiah and other people talk about this airplane that we're building as we're flying it.
Right.
So one of the things that we've benefited from as being a co-op is this support group. But then additionally, there's really concrete things like talking about branding and labeling. We got to split those duties of branding and labeling amongst several different farms. So by working together, we can have up to 16 different farms, if they're all 10,000 square feet or less, working together in a cooperative. And if we are organized enough, we can split out the duties that are required.
Sure.
It's hard to imagine one small-scale farm being able to do all this on their own. And in addition to all the farming, there's so much marketing, so much compliance. It's a really big task, and suddenly it becomes possible for the small farmer when they're working with an organized group of people.
Dylan, we were talking before we went on the air here about exactly what Drew is mentioning there, and that's the limits on co-ops, good or bad. The limit on the size of an individual co-op I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think it's certainly restrictive, and I think it's when you look at the overall state law that allows for, in essence, unlimited size of farms, it's challenging when we look at it as small farmers that we are limited to the size of a group that we can make. Cumulatively, 4 acres is the max that we can have. But we're not focusing on that. We're looking at the strength that we do find in the group that we are building. And that, we're finding, as Drew mentioned, just a lot of support and reassurance in our viability moving forward with what we are allowed to do inside of those confines that they've given us. So certainly, a lot of discussion in the co-op world of, moving forward, new legislation, should these caps be lifted on us? I think that the 4-acre cap, if we're going to not limit the size of, absolutely. Yeah. I think it most likely should be.
Is there any discussion of that in Sacramento that you hear about?
There's no discussion of changing either the 1-acre cap or the 4-acre cap that I'm aware of right now.
Well, that's something to talk about in the future, huh? One of the things Hezekiah mentioned to us when we talked with him earlier was that there are lots of tasks, as you guys are talking about, lots of tasks that Emerald Grown can help facilitate, meaning that they can offer expertise to local or regional co-ops. And here's what he had to say on that, and then we'll get your take on it.
What we're looking at primarily are the activities that heritage growers used to do on the farm that because of regulation, they are no longer able to do on the farm. Things like, topical or handcrafted small batch manufactured products, those activities can't be done on farm. So a cooperatively owned and operated Type S shared manufacturing license could add, could offer a really cool pathway there. Frankly, trimming. A lot of growers are having trouble trimming. That was a really core function of the high-end flower producers basically forever. If your product isn't handcrafted and it doesn't glisten in the bag, it just isn't going to command that premium. And so creating places where farmers can still be directly involved in the trimming, the processing, maybe even in the packaging in some cases. And so there really are a number of license types. Distribution starts to get a little bit trickier. You know, statewide logistics is a very complicated, expensive enterprise to run. And it may be that in some cases, growers are better off partnering with existing distributors. There I think, is a lot of opportunity there to explore. But more than Emerald Grown doing these activities directly, our purpose is to create and to organize the local regional co-ops doing these things for themselves. At the root of the cooperative movement is, of course, farmer ownership. And so, you know, Emerald Grown isn't going to grow and build and own these things. Our goal is to facilitate, to, you know, lubricate, to expedite the emergence of these cooperatives that will do these things, and to provide whatever support and service we can to get to that point.
And following up on that, Drew, we were talking, you know, about that very thing before we went on the air. Are cultivators and others seemingly open to the idea of a co-op, member-owned, user-owned, also member-capitalized, so you're sharing both benefits and the risk of doing business? So far, over the last year, people open to that, or are you getting good participation?
Yeah, so we, under the guidance of what at the time was CalGrowers, we've been forming a co-op committee through CalGrowers, and we built a roadshow that we took and traveled around with it. It was about an hour-long talk session. Several of us would show up, and we'd show a bunch of slides, and it was very well received. That was sort of the initial presentation to the cannabis community. There was one in Humboldt, there was one in Mendocino, there was one in Nevada City recently. So that's the answer is it's been very well received, and I think there's a lot of hope in it for a lot of people. You know, the small farmers are like I say, they've been having a lot of challenges, and there's a lot of places where you wake up and you go, I've just invested my whole life in this thing, and I don't know that it's going to carry on. But when you've got this concept of working together with other people, a lot of those challenges that you're worried about at 3 a.m. in the morning are a lot less because you got someone else to back you up, or you got someone else who can do it.
Dylan, you think the same thing? And you were saying earlier about the limits on the number of growers, cultivators you can have in a co-op. Is that enough?
It's more than yourself.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. Just as Drew said, you know, having the, you know, we all have our strengths, and along with that, we all have our weaknesses. And I think what you find in a cooperative organization is that, you know, you're going to find somebody that's really good at the marketing, and somebody that's really good at the sales, somebody that's really good at cloning, somebody that is an expert in breeding. And although many farmers, and all of us really for the most part, have been all of these, wearing all of these hats for all of these years, there's a lot of relief in having these people to, you know, to rely on and consult with. So yeah, I think that 16-acre, you know, 16 people working ultimately cumulatively with 4 acres is, in my opinion, a strong organization. And I think that it, you know, has a chance of success that potentially is stronger than an individual doing that on their own.
And you were also saying that different co-ops can still work together. You know, there's not cross-ownership, but say another co-op from this area, you could still share ideas and so on. Is that right?
Absolutely, and that's what we're really working towards is, you know, although it's limited in the size of the individual co-op, what we're really hoping to see is Humboldt County, Mendocino County, Trinity County, throughout the entire state, we're hoping to see a lot of co-ops. And what we can then do is really start to send a message to the consumer, because ultimately that's really what this is all about. We're all growing a product that we're hoping to get in front of a consumer and them deciding to purchase our product. And so part of the concept with this co-op movement is that currently there isn't really any way, if I'm a consumer and I walk into a dispensary in Southern California or the Bay Area, I don't know, you know, I'm presented with a lot of options and they're all very nice. They look great. They've got great labeling. They're in essence all telling me that they're the best small farm from Humboldt County or from Trinity or wherever they're from. Mm-hmm. So you don't really know who you're purchasing from. To be in a co-op, you have to be a small farm. And by small farm, we're now calling that 10,000 square feet or less. That's by the state's definition. So if a label, if a product is labeled that it is from a co-op, the consumer knows that they're supporting a small farm. And although that product is going to be in a lot of stores because we've done some good branding, and but it's going to stand out. And it's a way for that's the goal, is that there's a message to the consumer that they can have some assurance. You know, we don't have a organic certification in cannabis. There's a lot of third-party certifiers regarding growing practices, but there's nothing that really tells the consumer, you know, that they're supporting a small farm.
Yeah. Well, that gets us to the next thing that we want to hear from Hezekiah, something that comes up a lot on this program, often unsolicited. Is the strength of the Humboldt brand, the name that stands for quality, that has been around for such a long time. Since we hear about it a lot, we get the feeling it's important and is tied somewhat to the continued success of what Hezekiah likes to call heritage farms. Here's Hezekiah Allen.
We do provide a benefit, I think, to a lot of different folks with an interest in cannabis. You know, to the consumer, Emerald Grown can stand for a set of standards. It can stand for, you know, we mean everything we say when we bring products to market. If we call it farm fresh, then it is. And if we say small farm, we mean it. And so to the consumer, I think Emerald Grown is really about trust and integrity and getting flower, getting cannabis products that you can feel good about ultimately. To a, you know, a retailer or a manufacturer or a brand, Emerald Grown can be a very important supply chain partner. Tracking down consistent, reliable products, sourcing the various products that some of these big companies need to remain competitive in the market can be very challenging. And so Emerald Grown can be a liaison, can be a sourcing partner. And you know, to growers, Emerald Grown provides the tools needed to form a cannabis cooperative or to structure other cooperative enterprise. You know, there are some limitations to the Cannabis Cooperative Association, and there are strategies, there are cooperative strategies that other larger growers, or, you know, growers who don't fit perfectly into the mold can also adopt. And so, you know, Emerald Grown first and foremost exists to serve the farmers and to keep the heritage farming culture, well, you know, the parts of it that are worth keeping, to keep those small farms, those stewards of place that, you know, the romanticized grower. We want that to be around for future generations.
Drew, your reaction.
Yeah, well, I agree with a lot of what Hezekiah is saying in there, and I think that when we talk about forming co-ops and we talk about the kind of community that comes out of that, I think that's an important piece of the conversation. I think that that's something that the consumer is going to need to know as well, not only about the quality of the product or that it's coming from a small farm, but the very fact of people working together, that builds community.
Yeah.
And that's what Humboldt has had for many years in many different spots. Like, of course, we're from the Mattole Valley. We take care of each other out there. We run our own stuff, you know, our own water systems, our own electrical systems, yeah. Our own schools, yeah. Our own fire departments. We're isolated, and many communities throughout Humboldt County are like that. And so we rely on each other. And so it's that quality of community that Humboldt County is also known for. This is not the side they showed in Murder Mountain, right? This is well, they did. They showed it briefly. They just didn't emphasize it. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about taking the good people in our county and in other places who can work together and are willing to work together, make compromise, but build community and build business in the process of doing that.
And all the people you're talking about have been drawing on what has been learned over, 40 or 50 years around here.
Absolutely.
Which gets me to, Dylan, on a previous show, we talked with someone down in the Los Angeles area about this very thing, about the Humboldt brand, the small farmer, the quality, and so on. And what he said to us was this: Let's say a consumer walks into a retailer somewhere in the Los Angeles area, and all they've heard is how great the warehouse-grown product in that area is. And that's all they know. So they see it on the shelf, they grab it because that's what they've heard. His point was, it's all about the story told, exactly what Drew was saying. So if the Humboldt brand story through a co-op or however can get out, then you have a chance, don't you?
Absolutely. And you know, we all of us farmers and any farmer that's listening probably can tell you that this is something we've all become acutely aware of in the last year, is that, you know, everybody wants our product, but a big component of the product that they want is, in fact, the story.
Yeah.
And so the story that your guy from LA was talking about is being told, and it's not necessarily being told by those of us that actually represent the story always. And so this is where we see a component of the co-op being able to really present the true story, mm-hmm. You know, because everybody is presenting themselves as the original Humboldt farmer, the OG, the this, the that, and there's so much more to it than that. Mm-hmm. It's community, it's culture, it's all of these other things that.
And how do you go about getting that word out in a state this size with this many people?
Right.
How do you
right.
do that?
This is the challenge. This is part of what we think we can do more effectively as a group mm-hmm. of co-ops.
Right, to be faced with the market and communicating to the market your message as a small farmer is like, how am I going to do that? You need a lot of resources
to
do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a full-time job just in itself,
exactly.
isn't it? Marketing?
Absolutely.
I mean...
Right, so then you get in a position where you start penciling it out, and you're like, well, I can't be a small farmer because it's not viable. I have to be a big farmer. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, let's be small farmers in co-ops, or what's our other option, you know?
Well, we're going to continue our discussion with Drew Barber and Dylan Matole of Uplift Cannabis Co-op, and we'll be hearing more from Hezekiah Allen of Emerald Grown Co-op as well. First, though, a reminder that we'll be taking your calls a little later at 707-786-5946. You can also email questions or comments to us at studio@humboldtchronicles.com. Back after a short break. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. In the first part of our discussion, we talked a little bit about the advantages of co-ops and why they make sense in an increasingly competitive arena. That's just a beginning, though. It turns out that California farmers, as you may know, have relied on agricultural co-ops for generations, and there's a lot to learn from their experience in this state. Here again is Hezekiah Allen of Emerald Grown Co-op.
The unfortunate lesson is that even with co-ops, it can be pretty hard. We have seen a lot of crops go the way of you know, industrial ag. And I think a good thing, or, you know, I think it's good, is that folks are starting to wake up to that. And I think reconnecting with farming and reconnecting with the people who farm is becoming just more prominent culturally in general. But, you know, when we look to other co-ops, there absolutely are lessons. And this adventure, the sort of co-op specific chapter of this being a cannabis voice here in the state capitol started a couple years ago. Casey and I went to the California Center for Cooperative Development. Every year hosts a workshop for board members and executive team members of agricultural co-ops. And, you know, there are more than 100 agricultural co-ops here in California. Basically, every major agricultural export that our state produces, there is a co-op involved in some way or another. And before cannabis was regulated or legal, you know, we got to sit, we were quite the oddity, and you know, folks definitely raised an eyebrow when we told them what we were doing there, but they took us pretty seriously, and they said, well, good, glad you're thinking about it. This is how agriculture works. And so, you know, there is a tremendous amount to learn there. I think the rice growers co-op, out here, sort of Sutter, Yuba, you know, the north part of the state, they have a major role in managing and operating the port of West Sacramento. And so, you know, to see how they've connected their farms spread out over the entire north half of the state to this major infrastructure facility that none of them would have been able to maintain independently, that's a really important model for communities that are looking to aggregate product at centralized locations, you know, to bring transactional cost of distribution down. You're going to concentrate everything so it's one big pickup. Gosh, I mean, Blue Diamond is a really good one. They've been really good at setting and shaping trends. You know, everyone thinks of Blue Diamond because of almonds these days. The Blue Diamond Co-op actually created the almonds market because the other markets that their members were involved in weren't working. And so the ability to do this really effective marketing on scale is definitely a model to look at. Water stewardship, when it comes to compliance and stewardship of natural resources, we also see examples of rice-growing co-ops out here that manage their water collectively and are able to sort of better balance between irrigation and aquatic habitat needs. So, they could go on forever. We've been reading about lots of different co-ops for quite some time now.
Here with us in the studio, if you're just joining us, are Drew Barber and Dylan Matole of Uplift Cannabis Co-op. Guys, we just heard Hezekiah talking about rice and almond co-ops here in California. Interestingly, not only does he say they've been and continue to be effective, but in the case of almonds, he credits Blue Diamond Cooperative with creating the almond market. First of all, do you agree with that assessment? And secondly, clearly there are some differences between the rice and almond markets and cannabis, which is new to the legal California market. What do you draw from an experience like Blue Diamond, if anything?
Well, I'm sure Hezekiah is spot on with his assessment of Blue Diamond there. I think it's almost an apple to orange kind of comparison because of the limitations of size. So Blue Diamond, I actually don't know how many acres they have, but I'm quite confident it's not 4 acres. so you know, the cannabis co-op is limited in size, so
but it shows what's possible though, right?
Yeah, I think there's as a larger scale model. I mean, I think Blue Diamond was probably successful. I mean, total back of the napkin assessment, but I suspect that they were successful because to some degree because of the scale. So I don't expect a 4-acre co-op is going to invent some aspect of the cannabis marketplace, but I think we can participate, and that's maybe a co-op of co-ops or a mutual benefit corporation that's many co-ops working together can actually accomplish something that's a major market shift and actually do something really substantially different in that way. I don't think as an individual cooperative association we can quite pull that scale off, but.
But advantages, though, to a co-op, even a small co-op, like we've been talking about here, you guys own it, you capitalize it. If somebody buys the product, it goes to the farmer, not to some third party somewhere. It goes to the small farmers, right?
Yes.
Do I have that right?
You do. One of the fundamental, you know, principles of a co-op, which is a democratized form of corporation, is that it's one member, one vote. And so even with the large legacy co-ops like Blue Diamond and such, you know, regardless of if you have one farmer that might have 80 acres and one that has 300, they still get one vote. And so that's going to be the same way our co-op and all co-ops will operate, is one member, one vote. And there are member shares inside of the co-op. And so as basically what we're dealing with is a commodity, which we all grow as individual farms, which is our cannabis, which we're then taking to a facility, ideally, aggregated and doing various things with it, packaging, potentially trimming, doing these different things. What we're talking about as a co-op is the surplus. So it's the difference in the amount of money from what comes back to the farmer, and then there's that extra bit on top. And that's the margins. Mm-hmm. And we're operating in our cannabis businesses on very thin margins right now, very thin. And so what we're looking to do is return and retain really some of that surplus back to the farmer. So there isn't a big giant pool of money from that surplus that's then being extracted into a corporate account that then goes off to the shareholders of the corporation. Mm-hmm. It actually comes back in member share allotments to the individual farms or is reinvested into the cooperative itself.
Depending upon how much the individual farmer is participating in the co-op.
Yeah, by patronage, exactly.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so it actually, I mean, the fun way, I get really excited about this part, but that profit, if we can call it profit, mm-hmm. belongs to the farmer. That's the beauty of this. Generally, in every other structure, there's a profit made off of the back of the farmer, and the farmer has no access to that profit. Every time a farmer deals with any entity, mm-hmm. people are making profit off of that farmer. When the farmer's dealing with the cooperative that they're a member of, they get that profit. Right. That profit made from their product minus the administrative fees to operate the cooperative belongs to them. It goes into their account.
At some point, if an individual farmer in a co-op wants to increase their financial participation, they can do that, right? And if they do, any patronage that comes back to the co-op, their share then would be increased proportionally, right? Is that how that works?
Well, first of all, I'd say not all co-ops are structured identically. So there's a lot of different structures when you get into what we're talking about, or really the details of the membership agreements, marketing agreements, and various agreements that are constructed. And this is what we've been doing with our co-op internally in laying out how this business structure works. There isn't a always way of how a co-op operates, but absolutely a member can make capital contributions right. into the co-op. Most co-ops are largely funded by the members, but also we can look to outside investment. So there's nothing that says a co-op can't get a loan or get an outside investment. A member of the co-op must be a farmer, but we can still seek outside investment to, you know, build out infrastructure, to, you know, do various things that we would do as a business. Just
so
like
you can take on debt?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
But here's the exciting thing is that when we take on debt, that debt doesn't gain ownership or voting power in the business, which is the more of the, right. the corporate model where mm-hmm. the more you own, the more votes you have. That's not how a co-op works. The thing, just to sort of underscore what Dylan's saying, the thing that is consistent about all cooperative associations is that concept, one member, one vote, and you have to be a cultivator of 10,000 square feet or less to be that member. So you can't have a co-op of a cannabis cooperative association of people who are only manufacturers or people who are doing anything besides cultivation. Mm-hmm. It's really geared towards keeping that value that the farmers are generating of their own hands, keeping sure. it in their pockets or in their fields on their farms.
But if the co-op does take on debt, just as you would share in the patronage, you would also share in the risk that debt has, right? So the members yeah. of the co-op, that debt is shared, the sure. risk there is shared by all the members, just yeah. as it is with the profits, right?
That's
the,
right.
The risk and reward are yeah. equally shared, absolutely.
Yeah. And if you were taking on debt, you wanted to capitalize the co-op more than it already is, would that be for what? Would it be for infrastructure? Would it be for marketing? Would it be for what?
Well, it could be for a lot of things. It could be for infrastructure in the form of building out a facility. Mm-hmm. So when you ask about the advantages of co-ops, like on a local level and a statewide level, something that, you know, we want to share with farmers out there when you're considering getting together with your neighbors and discussing, maybe we should look at forming a co-op, is that there are certain things, many things that we can do as a co-op that you cannot do just with your neighbor.
Such as
collaborating on crop planting. What genetics are you going to grow? How much are we going to charge? These are all considered collusion in business if you do this. I can't just go to my farmer neighbor and say, hey, let's both grow this. We'll control the genetics, mm-hmm. and this is what we're going to charge for it. You know, that would be kind of an extreme
price
example.
Fixing.
These are price fixing.
Yeah, right.
As a group of co-op members, we absolutely can do these type of things. Not, you know, price fixing, still, there's things that we can't do.
Sure.
But on a localized level, there's things that we can do. We can basically, as a co-op under California state law, we can do all of the things that we can do under our normal cultivation license, mm-hmm. such as trimming, packaging, working out of a nursery, growing, you know, starting seeds, cloning, all of these various things that all of us farmers do, we can do these things together. In Humboldt County, they've set up very specific provisions for what we can do in shared facilities. We can, you know, work together with our farm members and cross lines that normally you wouldn't be able to do as a, you know, just a licensed farm individually.
Yeah. Our guests, Drew Barber and Dylan Matoll of Uplift Cannabis Co-op, will be staying with us. Plus, we'll be hearing more from Hezekiah Allen. And next, we'll move this story forward and take a look at 2019's prospects for the California cannabis industry. As a reminder, you can reach us at 707-786-5946 or studio at HumboldtChronicles.com. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. Here in the studio with us are Drew Barber and Dylan Matoll of the Uplift Cannabis Co-op. If you have a comment or a question, you can reach us at 786-5946 or studio at HumboldtChronicles.com. And if you're just joining us, along with Drew and Dylan, we've been hearing from Hezekiah Allen of Emerald Grown in Sacramento. We spoke with him by phone earlier, and interestingly, he's going to tell us here that California, once again, is leading the nation, this time in getting the cannabis co-op idea up and running.
You know, our co-op law was the first. California did pass the first cannabis co-op law. Massachusetts has passed one since. We're seeing a lot of co-op activity there. We are expecting co-op laws in, you know, Oregon, Washington, Colorado in the next year. Their legislature is just getting back in session, so we expect to see this. We expect to see this become a norm, but no, this one really did grow from seeds planted in the Emerald Triangle, and you know, we were the first to get the law across the desk, and we're kind of proving the idea as we go.
And following up on that, Drew and Dylan, issues like, let's say, interstate commerce, banking, taxation, industrial hemp even. We hear a lot about all of this. In fact, just last week, you guys and I were talking about this before the show. Just last week in Washington, a congressman from Oregon introduced legislation that would regulate marijuana like alcohol nationally. Do you hear anything about that movement?
Yeah,
what do you hear?
Oh, it's on our minds every day.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, we're putting so much energy and infrastructure into existing in our current regulated environment. The idea that this other massive looming thing could come in at any given moment, because it could just be a signature. All of a sudden, we wake up one day and our whole lives would be completely changed, because if things change on the federal level, I mean,
we move into a whole other transition period.
Yeah.
And like you had said, Dylan, before, it's not just the second one. Actually, it would be the third transition, right? Tell us about that.
Well, we started out with Humboldt County being kind of on the forefront of crafting an ordinance to bring all of our local farmers into compliance. And so those of us that are at this point now, you know, started with Humboldt County, mm-hmm. and that was followed, of course, by the state of California. So, you know, federal legalization would be the third big transition that frankly, I think most people that are in the business at this point are looking to that as likely sometime.
How do you plan for that? Or do you?
that's the question.
I just keep doing what you're doing?
It's all about foundation. You know, what we're doing right now is we're building a strong foundation for our group and for our co-op and for our individual farms. You know, we can't predict when that will happen, and all we can do is just do the best we can do now to build businesses that that are going to be ready to, you know, to move into that next level when it happens.
And other co-ops are forming, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a few different folks moving. There's a bunch of folks out in Salmon Creek. There's the Soham Growers Guild that's working on a bunch of co-ops formation right now. I think Humboldt County's really got this. You know, there's also other co-ops. There's a co-op down in Mendocino as well that's formed. Nevada City's working on co-ops. But I do want to just like give a little shout out for how awesome Humboldt County is, because we're sort of preloaded for this in so many ways because of our isolated communities and how we work together.
Well, and a lot of what is happening in California grew out of the Humboldt model. Right. I mean, when the idea of statewide legislation or legalization came up, a lot of people looked to Humboldt. OK, how do we do this? Right.
Yeah, I think in the early days of, you know, in the 90s and in the early days of medical cannabis, yeah, right. You know, the majority of the product was
96 or something
You know, Humboldt County was, you know, the producer for the most part of
this is where the knowledge is.
This is where the knowledge is. This is where the product came from. Certainly that is changing to where we're seeing a statewide industry. And that's not, you know, we don't see that as, you know, the end of the world or necessarily a bad thing. That's just the way it goes. You know, Californians all over, you know, do and should have the right to get involved in this business. Humboldt County doesn't, you know, we're not Humboldt Nation exclusive.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, who knows if all of this will pass and be signed into law? We don't know. But let's find out what Hezekiah is hearing from people like our congressman, Jared Huffman, and from the incoming administration in Sacramento. Larry, I believe we're looking for Hezekiah, cut 17.
You know, I think the intersection of those two is the thing that just happened, which is the federal legalization of hemp and California sort of working to implement that. I think hemp is going to have huge positive but also challenging impacts on communities across the state. I think that with the farm bill passing, with hemp legalization intact, that definitely provides pretty solid potential for something big happening in Washington. You know, I've been working on a project that Mr. Huffman's office is involved with to really try to focus more federal enforcement funding on federal land. It's such a tragedy that there are public lands that are still being used for cannabis cultivation. So I think that's likely to be a high priority out of Washington. I think there's potential to see tax reform, banking reform, and honestly, full descheduling and opening the doorway to interstate commerce. You know, I think these things are much closer than they've ever been. I mean, I suppose that is how time works, isn't it? But, you know, I think I'm ready to call those big events imminent at the federal level. Here in Sacramento, really, I think the only lever that the state government may have, because remember, the voters passed Prop 64, so a lot of that is kind of locked in. The state government can't necessarily do a lot here without another vote of the people. Certainly a fair amount of amendment, but the one big lever, and I think the issue that everyone's eyes should be on, is tax reform. Counterintuitive as it may be, a lower tax rate may actually generate more revenue, because right now the tax rate is so high that a lot of consumers, even if they do have convenient access, the product costs 30, 40, in some extreme cases even 50% more than the unregulated products that are just as readily available. So, you know, I think tax reform is going to be the big one here in Sacramento. Other than that, you know, the new administration is probably going to be a bit more hands-on. Mr. Newsom was a proponent of Prop 64. I expect he'll continue to be very attentive to the issue. We will see what the outcomes are.
Drew and Dylan, a quick comment on that, and then I think we have a caller waiting on the line. Taxation.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate all of Hezekiah's work over the years on this, and yeah, I definitely agree with him. It's I think a little bit less taxation has the possibility of producing more of a market that's viable. And his point about, you know, the consumer having to make that choice of going into the clinic. Some people will, or it's not a clinic, a retail shop, but some people will just make that choice. I'm going to go into the retail shop instead of buying my product on the street corner. But not everybody has that same idea.
Yeah. Larry, do we have time for one more cut from Hezekiah about scaling things up even further?
Yeah, we can fit that in.
All right.
I think absolutely. As the market scales, growers are either going to need to scale by getting bigger or scale by working together more closely. And the cooperative model is undoubtedly the engine that drives global agriculture. And that's the thing, is when we talk about interstate, the jump from inside of California to interstate is much larger than the jump from interstate to global. And so, you know, basically the next few years, we're going to very quickly find ourselves, I think, in a global market of 8+ billion. It's a lot of humans, but 8+ billion humans, potentially some of them consuming cannabis, competition from all over the world, it's going to be almost unimaginable at this point. And I think that no matter which scenario plays out in my head, having strong, well-organized, community, local economy-oriented cooperatives at the heart of our farming culture, the outcomes are going to be better. As horrible or amazing, and frankly both, as they could be, the outcome will be better if we work together. And co-ops institutionalize that working together in a very streamlined way.
All right, Dylan, 8 billion people, some of whom are going to consume cannabis. That could be, on the one hand, terrifying. On the other hand, the fact that you guys have gotten a head start on this, and as you mentioned a few minutes ago, the foundation is already there. Is that why you can still sleep at night?
It's definitely part of it. I think it's it's something that, like Drew said, it's on our minds, at least throughout the day, every day.
It's on my mind at night. I don't sleep.
Drew actually doesn't really sleep.
He doesn't sleep.
So I don't know if he sleeps better or worse. He just doesn't sleep. But yeah, it's the market's huge. Along with, like Hezekiah said, absolutely. Along with all those new potential consumers comes, we have an agricultural world that is not in the game right now, that is certainly looking to be. But it, because of the foundation of Humboldt and the 40 plus years of, unofficial branding that's been happening, I think that, most of us farmers get pretty excited about the option of being able to take our product, take our name, take our story, and share it with a much larger potential consumer base. Absolutely.
And I think the advantage that you guys have as having already formed a co-op, as Hezekiah said, what he hears in Sacramento is that all of this is imminent nationally and globally. You guys are going to, at that time, already have so much experience in the legal market that maybe you'll be able to just adjust however you need to, and to meet that even larger market.
Yeah, I think that's sort of on our minds. I think that's kind of what we're looking at. I mean, certainly when we look at the numbers and the what you can generate in terms of profit today, it's hard to keep doing that if you don't think it's going to get better. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways we think and hope that it's going to get better.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, too, we're hopeful in the sense that what we're looking at here is, we're not looking to be the dominating force in the world market as a co-op, probably not even as a county. What we're looking at is long-term economic stability for Humboldt County.
You want to make a living.
We want to make a living. We want to continue to see the shops on the plaza in Arcata and in Garberville and the local fire departments get their fundraising. We want to see, we want to see this economy, grow and thrive and carry on for years in the future. And so, having a strong foundation, working together, forming co-ops, forming, even outside of the co-ops, just strong community organizations that are working together is where we see the future.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, but just real quickly, if somebody wanted to get in contact with your co-op, how would they do that?
We have an Instagram account at Uplift Cannabis Co-op is our Instagram account. That's probably the best way at this point.
All right.
That's
Drew Barber and Dylan Matole, Uplift Cannabis Co-op. Thank you guys for making the time to be here. It's just been invaluable to get your thoughts on all of this.
Thanks for having us.
It's complicated,
it's
and hope to have you back at some point.
Great.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, LostCoastOutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. I want to thank again real quickly our sponsors who make all this happen for us: Eco Groovy Deals, Satori Wellness, Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Sensa Valley, and the Humboldt County Collective. Thank you very much. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month, which means we'll see you next time, February the 20th at 6 p.m.